Here we go. This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the unique natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Shell. Today we're talking with Clint Nagel. Clint is the president of Gallatin Wildlife Association, and he's retired from the U.S. Geological Survey and its Water Resources Division. He's lived in Bozeman since 2011. So, Clint, welcome. Good to be talking with you. How are you doing?
Thank you, Ben. Good to be here.
So, Gallatin Wildlife Association has been monitoring a variety of wildlife and wilderness and forestry issues for a number of years now. The last time that I interviewed you, I believe you focused on the state of Montana's legislature. So the legislative session is over now, and for the 2025 session, there were several legislative bills pertaining to public lands and wildlife that you were following in our state capital. So how did things turn out?
There were about 4,495 bills, draft requests.
Wow.
In the legislature. 1,755 of those were introduced, and out of that, 120 bills were transmitted to the governor's desk for signature, and out of that, 32 were vetoed. So it was a mixed bag, as it usually is when it comes to wildlife. Some bad bills were defeated, and a few did pass, and they did go to the governor's desk for a signature. There were several anti-wolf bills, and they were defeated, but it only takes one to pass. And unfortunately, we had that happen, bills that would cause harm to the wolf as well as to the biodiversity of our ecosystem. And like I said, we had that in this case. There was one anti-wolf bill, House Bill 259. It did pass. It allowed for use of infrared scopes and thermal imagery. It also allowed baiting and artificial lighting for wolf hunting and trapping. And that did pass. We had some clean water bills that they weren't clean water bills. They were more on the side of increasing pollution. House Bill 664, that bill was to repeal numeric standards and go back to the narrative standard. That bill passed. That's really unfortunate. That is a step backward in terms of trying to curb water quality pollution. And we had a bill that had to deal with conservation easements, Bill 209. That bill was to limit, basically they wanted to put a term limit on conservation easements. As of right now, the whole purpose of conservation easements was that they were a lifetime. There was no term limit. They were a lifetime in favor of the landowner, and they wanted to put like a 40-year term limit on that, and that would basically render a lot of the conservation easements, you could say, undesirable or not as desirable. And fortunately, that bill was defeated. Then we had a couple resolutions. They weren't laws or bills. They had no enforcement behind them, but they were just a resolution to show basically people in Congress that the state of Montana supports this, it supports that. And we had Senate Joint Resolution 14, which was basically a resolution to show our congressional representation that the state of Montana was in favor of releasing federal wilderness study areas. That bill was defeated. Mm-hmm. And then we had House Joint Resolution 24, and that bill was to show support to the congressional delegation that the state of Montana was in support of Utah's selling transfer of federal land back to the state And that resolution was defeated. So those are good signs. They're kind of a political statement more than anything else. But all it takes these days is, is to show congressional representatives and senators that, you have a resolution, you put the state of Montana behind it. Basically, you're saying the whole state of Montana supports this. And that's not the case.
Yeah.
And we were glad to see that both of those were defeated. They put a bad picture for the state.
There was a bill in the House that would have allowed for hunters to get a second mountain lion license. How did that bill fare, do you know?
That I do not know, sorry to say. I don't know how that turned out. I could look it up, though.
And there was also a bill that would have set up a trapper apprentice program. How did that bill fare?
I believe, and I'm not sure about this, I believe that may have passed, but I don't. I would not take that to the bank.
Okay. And
there were so many bills that had to deal with trapping and hunting of wolves and other predators that, to be honest with you, it was hard to follow every and each one of them. So,
state of Utah is known, their legislature in Utah is known for wanting to divest the government, the federal government, of its public lands and turn them over to the state. And I think some of the Montana legislatures were inclined to support that effort. How did that go?
Well, that was those resolutions I was telling you about. They were defeated. There was some support for it in the state house, but a lot of these were defeated basically on the floor vote. A lot of these were passed out of committee, and but by the time they got to the floor vote, they were defeated there. So sometimes these committees, they can be kind of I'll use the word stacked, if you will, and when it comes to state government, there's a lot of what I will call political gamesmanship that goes on as far as who's on what committee and all that. And so, some of these they're not surprising they got out of committee, but fortunately, cooler heads prevailed on during the House total vote on the floor.
There was an effort to redefine the quail as an upland bird, which I think made it more vulnerable to being shot. Do you know how that fared? Or was that just in the commission, the Fish and Wildlife Commission? Or was it in the legislature?
Again, I would have to look up on that. I'm not aware of that.
Okay. Anything else in the state legislature you want to comment on?
No, other than the fact that I'm not looking forward to 2 years from now.
Yeah.
I've been following the state legislature for, this is the third session, started in 21. They have a state legislature meets every 2 years. And so it's not the most fun thing to do because you're bombarded basically by just counts and counts of bills. And some of the stuff, I think, people just dream up in their sleep overnight and put it into a draft and submit it to the House or Senate. And it's like these things are just pushed through. Fortunately, most of them, I guess you could say, they do maybe fade away, but everything happens so fast because you're trying to cover basically, in this case, 4,000 drafts over a period of about 3 months, you know. And so, and even the House and Senate members, they don't really have time to know what's in some of this stuff. And it's pushed through. It's all political gamesmanship. And unfortunately, I bet you 90% of the public in Montana have no idea what's going on. The things that get covered the most, obviously, things that pertain to the budget for health care, education, things of that sort.
Yeah.
Wildlife bills kind of get lost in the weeds.
Shall we move on to national legislation?
Sure, yeah.
So tell me about the Fix Our Forests Act. That's something I think you've been following.
Yeah, there's quite an onslaught here as far as legislation and even administrative action coming out of Washington. There's four different actions or bills that basically pertain to the national forests, BLM lands. One of them is Fix Our Forests Act. That bill has passed the House of Representatives. It did that back in January, I believe, of this year. And right now it is sitting in the Senate. As far as I know, they have not had a vote on this yet. When it was submitted, there was a group of bipartisan, or not, I shouldn't say a bipartisan group of senators, Republicans and Democrats, who came together to basically introduce the Fix Our Forests Act, and they made some changes to it. And they've had some debate on it, but there has not been a vote. So that is still open for some type of action here.
So what is...
And then you have... Go ahead.
What would that act do? What are the issues involved?
Well, basically, it wants to increase timber production. It wants to... Basically, everything I want to talk about here, they're all trying to do the same thing, and that's increase timber production, even on old mature and old growth forests. And they want to, the executive order that the president had signed, like I say, there's a lot of politics here. He wants to basically make the United States basically self have all the, as much of the timber as possible originate out of the United States rather than import timber from Canada, for example. And so he wants to cut off timber imports. And so if he does that, he's got to increase timber production somewhere, and that would be from within the United States. And so that would mean increasing timber production, increased logging on national forests, BLM land. And so basically, Fix Our Forests Act and presidential executive order. I think that one, they want to increase timber production by 25% across the United States. And that turns out to become a big deal when you stop and think about it.
I assume that's a piece of legislation you're opposing.
Yes. We're opposing the Fix Our Forest Act as it is currently written.
And it's a misnomer. It's a misnomer to call it a Fix Our Forest.
Yes. That's the way a lot of this gamesmanship is being played out. They call it something that, they call it a name that sounds good at the face, but you don't have to dive too deep to figure out that it does just the opposite of what you would think. And so then you have the reconciliation bill, which has obviously passed the both Senate and House. That was passed with amendments in there to, again, increase timber production. And one of the questions I had was, okay, you have these three legislative and administrative actions here. How are they going to be administered? Are they going to be cumulative? You know, because all three of these things do the same thing, basically, increase timber production, and they do so on mature and old growth forests. And it's like, it's hard to understand how three of these are going to play out in the, you know, on public land here. And I have yet to receive a good answer to that question. And so the reconciliation bill passed. that had the same basically intent as Fix Our Forest Act and the presidential executive order. The reconciliation bill was going to do the same thing. You know, the percentages might be a little different here and there, but the intent is the same. And then you had just recently rescind the roadless rule, which is an administrative act that the Secretary of Agriculture did back about a month ago, I believe it was. And there's about and that could be a big change because you've taken all the inventory roadless areas and again opening those up to some type of potential action. It could be increasing building roads into the area, increasing timber production. And if and when that happens, you're taking a lot of landscape out of potential wilderness. So some of these inventory wilderness areas are, you know, they have characteristics as wilderness. And it may be just a matter of time before they're designated as such. But if you take that out of contention, well, then the these lands are going to be opened up to whatever the Forest Service, local officials feel like doing, and our chance of having increased wilderness over time will be gone.
So getting rid of the roadless rule goes along with increasing timbering, the logging in the forest. So trucks would be getting access. I assume that the reason you're opposed is because of the impact on wildlife.
Yeah, it's going to either impact wildlife directly or indirectly. Because a lot of this is, well, obviously wildlife habitat, and that also you're going to have some endangered species habitat in there. And sometimes these roadless rules, or the roadless landscape is roadless for a reason, that they're either unsafe or they're too steep of a terrain to build roads or what have you. So, but they could still go in there and do helicopter logging and things of that sort. But yeah, a lot of the current, well, let me say it this way, a lot of the perceived protections that we thought once existed is no longer there if all these actions stand up in court.
Right.
And I'm sure that a lot of these will be challenged in court, but it's really too soon to say how that will play out, if or when that plays out. There's a lot. Basically, all these things are in a state of flux, and it's basically, I can't think of the term I want to use, but it's still in motion as far as how it's going to play out over time. So it's probably too soon to talk about litigation or anything on any of these, but because it's all very fluid. That was the word I was trying to think of.
So one of the local issues that you're following is the Forest Service proposal to do some logging in the South Cottonwood Canyon, just south of Bozeman. What's the status of that right now?
Well, that is basically this is the Highlight South Cottonwood Field Reduction Project. It was basically a proposal by the Forest Service. It was actually, from what I just learned yesterday, it's been on the drawing board for about 3 years, evidently, but it's just now come to the public's attention. But most of this is a logging project, or I'll call it a steel reduction project, because they're talking about several types of treatment here. They're talking about obviously clear cutting, helicopter logging, prescribed burning, hand thinning of vegetation, and all that's going to be done on about just under 8,000 acres in the Highlight South Cottonwood drainage. of the Custer-Gallatin National Forest. And most of it actually will be in the highlight drainage because portions of that drainage have been logged before. And they're also talking about putting 10 miles of road into these drainages. We're not sure exactly where that 10 miles of road is going to be. That is one of our discussions or questions that we have yet to be answered by the Forest Service. Actually, as I'm talking to you now, in about 1 hour, I'm supposed to be meeting with the Forest Service on exactly this project.
So, any hope that the South Cottonwood Canyon project is going to be modified or abandoned?
I doubt if it will be abandoned. We've got to be clear here. Most of the action will be on the highlight drainage. They are talking about a good swath of landscape in the South Cottonwood will be used by, will be managed by hand thinning. In other words, they'll have troops or crews go in there and thin out the lower vegetation by hand. There won't be any logging trucks up and down through the South Cottonwood drainage that I know of. And that's one of the questions I have, is to make sure that stays that way, because the South Cottonwood drainage is a roadless area in and of itself, and they've never had a fire in there, and it's never been logged. So it's quite a unique landscape, very dense, very, very rich in biodiversity. It would be a shame to see anything go in there and disturb that. The whole purpose of this, as they say, is to curtail forest fires, wildfires. But to be honest with you, there's no more of a danger of a wildfire in there now than there was, let's say, 20 years ago. It's pretty subjective to say we need to cut these trees down to cause a wildfire. You could use that analysis to say, well, let's cut all the trees down, we won't have any fires. But that's not practical, and that defeats the whole purpose of having a national forest. So there's got to be some common sense here. And we're going to try to protect as much of this as we can.
Uh-huh. Are there any other local issues that you're involved with?
Well, we're still involved in the Highlight Porcupine Bufflehorn Willow Study Area, that landscape actually borders the South Cottonwood drainage.
That hasn't been settled yet.
What's that?
That hasn't been settled yet.
No. It's very political, and so we're working on that. Then we've just come aware that the Fish, Wildlife, and Parks state offices are wanting to increase the kill quota for wolves up to 500 this coming year. And that's almost twice as much as what it usually is. And that's something that's going to raise the ire of a lot of people, I'm sure, as well as us. And so that's another battle that we have to face before us.
Well, Clint, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask you, I've heard recently about a proposal to expand the borders of Yellowstone National Park, and Bozeman's just an hour and a half north of the park. What's the Wildlife Association position on that idea? Do you want to see the borders expanded?
My feeling on that is sure. I mean, there are some areas where I think a border expansion is definitely needed. One of them is over there in the Gardner area on the north side of the park, where it's basically a bison's winter feeding ground. Right now, that is outside the park. And it sure would be nice if that was, if the park was expanded to include that into national park land. So they would not be basically killed, slaughtered, if you will, just right outside the park boundary. I think that was short-sighted when the park boundary was developed.
Right.
That was not included, but we know a lot more now than we did then. At that time, when the park was expanded, I don't know that exactly if bison. Well, bison there was maybe 20 in number, and they had not really a need to move outside the park because there was enough food, forage for them to last them through the winter for 20 bison or so.
Uh-huh.
But now when you're getting up from up to 5,000, 6,000, if you have a harsh winter, those bison want to move out of the park to the more of a, to the winter feeding grounds.
Right, and, lower elevation,
Lower elevation. And so that should be included in the park. I've long thought that.
All right.
And you could use that same rationale for probably increasing the park boundary on the west side of the park as well. When bison move out of the park there, toward across Highway 191, Hebgen Basin.
Okay, well, Clint, we're out of time, but I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you. Good luck on those various issues that you're working on, and hope you get some success. So it's a tough time to be doing it, because the Trump administration has not been terribly favorable to wildlife and wilderness issues. So thanks again.
No, you bet. Before I go, can I just say a big thank you to you for all the work you've done in basically doing this podcast for GWA for the last 7 years, I think it is.
It's been a pleasure.
I really appreciate your time and effort in this. I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Clint. It's been a pleasure. Okay, well, we've been talking to Clint Nagel, who's the president of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association. More information about the organization and its activities can be found at its very interesting website, www.gallatinwildlife.org. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or to buzzsprout.com and scroll down to Wilderness and Wildlife. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.